Six music.
BBC Radio. Six music documentaries.
Hello and welcome to The First Time with me, Matt Everett. This is where we meet some of the most influential figures in music and take a look at the pivotal first moments that made them who they are today. Sometimes the most influential bands are not the ones who sell hundreds of thousands of records or the ones that have massive acclaim during their lifetime. Sometimes it's the bands who stand outside the mainstream who end up having the most impact upon it. And that's certainly true of US alt-rock band Pavement. They helped epitomise a lo-fi sound, combined with cryptic but intelligent lyrics, which grew to dominate the American underground music scene of the 90s, and inspired bands like Weezer, Mogwai, The Shins, Radiohead, Blur, and pretty much anyone with a love of arty, overdriven rock. And Pavement singer, songwriter and guitarist, and a fully-fledged solo star in his own right, is my guest here on The First Time this week. It's Stephen Malkmus.
Music scene is crazy, bands start up, each and every day. I saw another one just the other day, a special new band.
Here, Stephen talks about his childhood growing up in California, his growing obsession with the West Coast punk scene, and his early formative bands. He looks back on forming Pavement with Scott Cannonberg in the late 80s and the recording of their seminal debut album, 1992's Slanted and Enchanted. We also cover the split of the band and their reunion, as well as Malkmus' many and varied music projects, like the Crush Brothers and the Silver Jews, and his ongoing band, The Jicks, who most recently worked with Beck on their last album, Mirror Traffic.
Shops a must, no big hair. Songs mean a lot when songs are bought, and so are you.
And I started by asking Stephen, as I do with all my guests, when was the first time he was aware of music?
I would say it would have been just looking at my parents' record collection of like four records, which was like The Fifth Dimension and Mamas and Papas, kind of middle class, breezy pop music in their record collection. And I remember looking at this Fifth Dimension album cover. It was, they do Up, Up and Away in My Beautiful Balloon, these kind of orchestrated pop stuff, and just seeing all these psychedelic colors on it, like these purple and yellow, and just kind of wondering what the 60s are as a 4 or 5 year old person, what it really means.
Up, up and away.
Did you find it really appealing, music, even from a young age? Were you drawn to it?
I liked music, maybe not them. You know, I liked, my big song was like one is the loneliest number by Three Dog Night. Do you know that one?
It's ka-ching.
One is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. Two can be as bad as one. It's the loneliest number since the number.
There was almost some first grade math in that song too. I also was really into this series of songs on television, which were, they were called Schoolhouse Rock. I don't know, you might have had a similar thing here, but they were songs about grammar and history and math a little bit, like they were sort of like, I unpack my adjectives, do 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 do. I started with adjectives, and there were songs about the No More Kings, which is really interesting. Here is it's America and Britain. This one was about George, and he was even wanted to tax our cup of tea, and so we disagree. We really disagree, and then we, you know, Paul Revere, and it tells the whole story. No more kings. Taxation without representation, that's wrong, and stuff. And these songs were kind of groovy, kind of child rock.
Rocking and a rolling, swishing and a splashing over the horizon, what can it be? The pilgrims sailed the sea to find a place to call their own. In their ship Mayflower, they hope to find a better home. They finally knocked on Plymouth Rock, and someone said, we're there. It may not look like home, but at this point I don't care. Oh, they were missing Mother England. They swore their loyalty until the very end. Anything you say, King, it's okay, King. You know it's kind of scary on your own. Gonna build a new land the way we planned. Could you help us run it till it's grown?
What about the first records that you owned? That were yours.
I was heavily into disco, like Boogie Fever and Learning to Do the Hustle, and that was huge for me. And then I was into novelty songs like Convoy. I was into singles. I was a singles buyer. I really didn't buy albums for some reason when I was a kid. I would just go to the top 40 singles thing, and the song Convoy was really important to me. It was a trucker song. I don't know if
I know. I remember the film Chris Christopherson, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great film.
Yeah, Breaker 19, this here's a rubber duck. You got a copy on me, Big Ben? Come on. Oh, yeah, 10-4, Big Ben, for sure, for sure. By golly, it's clean, clear to Flagtown. Come on. Yeah, it's a big 10-4 there, Big Ben. Yeah, we definitely got the front door, good buddy. Mercy sakes alive, looks like we got us a convoy.
Was the dark of the moon on the 6th of June in a Kenworth pulling logs. Cab over Pete with a reefer on and a Jimmy hauling hogs. We is heading for Bear on I-10 about a mile out of Shaky Town. I says, Pigpen, this here's a rubber duck and I'm about to put the hammer down.
Back off them hogs. Good, 10-4, about 5 miles or so. 10, roger, them hogs is getting intense up here.
By the time we got into Tulsa Town, we had 85 trucks in all. But they's a roadblock up on the Cloverleaf, and them bears was wall to wall. Yeah, them smokies as thick as bugs on a bumper. They even had a bear in the air. I says, calling all trucks, this here's the duck. We about to go a-hunting bear.
Big Ben, you're still too close. Yeah, them hogs are starting to close up my sinuses. Mercy sakes, you better back off another 10.
Well, we rolled up Interstate 44 like a rocket sled on rails. We tore up all of our swindle sheets and left them setting on the scales. By the time we hit that shy town, them bears was getting smart. They'd brought up some reinforcements from the Illinois National Guard. There's armored cars and tanks and jeeps and rigs of every size. Yeah, them chicken coops was full of bears, and choppers filled the skies. Well, we shot the line, we went for broke, with 1,000 screaming trucks, and 11 long-haired friends of Jesus in a chartreuse microbus.
Here, rubber duck, just sodbuster, come on there, yeah, 10-4, sodbuster, listen, you want to put that microbus in behind that suicide jockey? Yeah, he's hauling dynamite, and he needs all the help he can get.
Well, we laid a strip for the Jersey Shore and prepared to cross the line. I could see the bridge was lined with bears, but it didn't have a doggone dime. I says, Pigpen, this here's a rubber duck. We just ain't gonna pay no toll. So we crashed the gate doing 98. I says, let them truckers roll 10-4.
First album band I really liked was like probably Kiss. That was becoming more of a fan, I guess, of a and defining yourself in that band, or you know, saying to your friends like, we both like this band and this is what rules, and what doesn't rule is not, you know, I'm not going to listen to that. So
what was the Kiss track that you used to
like? I liked Hotter Than Hell. Now, Hotter Than Hell was their second album. It was been out for like 4 years when I bought it, and it was just, it looked completely like pornographic, the back cover of it. There was like girls and like whipped cream and like these kind of devils, sex devil weirdos. Like, to me at that age, it looked completely like way out there, like above my age, something I don't understand and I probably shouldn't. Later on, they made albums that were more made for my that age, you know, they became even more cartoon characters, but at that time they were still kind of a rock glam band.
Just too
first gigs that you used to go to, can you remember, that made an impact on you?
The ones that made an impact on me were American hardcore shows. I could talk about going to see Neil Diamond and Elton John, but it didn't have much of an impact. I was just along, and John Denver, stuff like that. But definitely going to see bands like the Dead Kennedys and DOA, this band from Canada, and Black Flag and the Circle Jerks. They would come. I'm from California, and they would come to the Central Valley where I lived and put on a show for 200, you know, hormonal punker kids, dudes. Those were my idols, like the guitar player for DOA or something. I just watching him play, you know, I guess I was looking for some role models of what it's like to be older already. So that took up my high school years, hardcore. And in America, and here, I'm sure, but in the early 80s, I guess we were blessed to have this hardcore thing. I don't know, here you maybe had indie like the Smiths, and I'm sure there was punk, crass, bands like that. But we had this hardcore thing that was pretty organic and not industry-based. There was only really like Minor Threat on the East Coast, of course, that became Fugazi, which everyone knows is amazing. And a little in Chicago, but it was a California thing. And so against that at that time, I didn't know about the Smiths or Echo and the Bunnymen or these things I liked maybe 2 years later. There was just like hair metal, like Def Leppard and Billy Squire, Van Halen.
So what was your first band?
I played in?
Yeah, that you played in. What were they like?
Right, that was the Straw Dogs. We made a demo, and you can find it on this sort of hardcore website.
It's there, my God, brilliant.
Yeah, because we did make this demo on a tape machine like that one behind you in a guy's garage, and it's just kind of generic, run-of-the-mill California jokey hardcore played by 16-year-olds.
Were you any good?
Not really. We were kind of melodic. We weren't all purely thrash. A lot of songs were slow and then play the same thing at double speed and then come back again, you know? It's like do 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 do. The lyrics were very jokey, and also we were vaguely communist. We thought you had to have with some little like theme to your band. So we were mock like communist youth. We had songs a little bit about respecting Russian ethics, I guess. We weren't very good. So long story short.
She walks home.
Feelgood is one of the people that you mentioned kind of as like a key artist who kind of predate British punk. They're kind of part of the formation of the pub rock. When did you first hear them?
In the 90s. This is later. I like this idea of the band as a kind of thieves, or, you know, at least their image is sort of, first of all, we're like not from London. We're not like in the in crowd. And we're for the lads a bit, you know, like, girls, if chicks dance to us, that's awesome. You know, like, we actually, you know, that's our dream. But, you know, we don't really care or something because we're badass. So, like, the singer, I just liked him a lot. I just think he's like Marky Smith, not so trying so hard to be a literary speed freak, literary thing. But, you know, he's tough with his tie. And I just, the look is what I like. It's not too fancy. And the sounds are stripped down, rock and roll. Yeah. I think everyone should love Dr. Feelgood.
First impressions of Scott Camberg, the man you went to go and form Pavement with. Can you remember the first?
Him. Yeah, well, I know him since even fifth or sixth grade. Just a nice guy, not a threatening, dark person.
What were your shared musical obsessions? Did you have a lot of
them? Well, with him, it was later. I didn't put any groups like this on the list that you had, but he liked punk a bit, but he was also the new wave guy. He knew about all this new, well, I call it new wave, but like Echo and the Bunnymen, and it was post-new wave, and the Smiths, and the Cure, and the Alarm. He liked the Alarm a lot.
Okay, know? That's a strange one.
Yeah, he was really into the Alarm. And I thought this is just like girl music a bit, like not to keep going on splitting this up. I had trouble getting into pop music up to that point. But I did, when he played me REM and Echo and the Bunnymen, I really liked both of those bands, and we sort of bonded on that mixed with the punk that I liked. And I guess I was outgrowing punk a little bit, and I was also, you know, wanting to meet girls, so I had to, like, listen to music that girls like too. And those are the ones that we bonded on.
Jimmy Bob, made of stone. Charlie Clark, no way home. Bring on the dancing horses, headless and all alone. Shiver and say the word.
You're listening to The First Time here on 6 Music with me, Matt Everett, and that was Echo and the Bunnymen with Bring On the Dancing Horses, the choice of my guest this week, one-time Pavement frontman and indie rock hero, Stephen Malkmus.
6 Music. BBC 6 Music.
I've been crowned the king of it, and it-
Hi, I'm Matt Everett. Welcome back to the first time here on Six Music with my guest, Stephen Malkmus, sometime Pavement singer and a genuine US indie rock hero, talking us through the music that's inspired his life.
First Pavement album, Slices and Chalice.
Yeah.
Can you remember the reaction when it came out? Because now people hold it up as like, it's this iconic record. Can you remember being pleased with the way that people received it?
I was really shocked here because, like, we were not expecting anything. I mean, I guess I just remember the first times that we came to England, and we had this label called Big Cat, and the guy that was owning it, he managed EMF. Remember them? And so he had a bit of money from that, but he was like a kind of fan of alternative sounds. He had a little bit of Malcolm McLaren in him, like in terms of trying to kind of wind people up and bring like a hype to things when it was there to be hyped. And so we got here and played our first show. I think it was with Jacob's Mouse or a band like that that was on Ouija, Cool Kids. It was packed here in London. I mean, I don't know if it was 400 people or 500 or exactly where it was, but it was, like, really full, our first show, and it was, like, terrifying. And also, people like, even though we must have had some youthful energy, maybe some good songs, but people were into it, like, right away. So that was just odd. I just never thought people would be right into it straight off the go, but that happens here sometimes if you have just the support of the media.
Did you enjoy your time in Pavement? I mean, you had, you know, something like Cut Your Hair, which is probably your first hit, for want of a better word. Did you enjoy your time in the band?
Yeah, basically. I mean, I think always, you know, in a group, I mean, I don't know if it might not have been this way for you, but you're always thinking, like, that you're glad that you're doing this instead of something else. So even when it's kind of hard, you're like, what if I wasn't doing this? You know, I'd be out having to get a job or being a guitar tech or who knows. Even when it's hard, you're basically doing everything and you're really grateful. And at that time of your life, of my life, to be in my 20s and traveling around and just fancy free and riders with beer and, you know, parties, and it was great, really. I mean, I don't think I would say I definitely enjoyed it. But sometimes I was tired or whatever, of course, or just burned out. But
can you remember first thinking, my future doesn't move forward with this band, this is, I want to leave?
Yeah, I guess maybe that was towards after this album that was called Bright in the Corners. And I think, and touring after that, I think after like four albums or five albums, and it had kind of, you were starting to see the repetition of it all, and are starting to feel the repetition of it all. And it was just getting tiring to work together, and it was kind of at this point, and it's starting, it was like peaking, you know. So that's when 90% of groups, well, when it starts, even though we had Terror Twilight and it stayed that thing, when you can see that it's going to start going down, or it's definitely not going up without like some astronomical changes in what you're doing, like getting a producer or changing your sound, like Fleetwood Mac or something, then you get off the ride, potentially, and that's what we did.
I got a black magic woman. I got a black magic woman. Yes, I got a black magic woman. Got me so blind I can't see that she's a black magic woman, and she's trying to make the devil out of me. Don't turn your back on me, baby. Don't turn your back on me, baby. Yes, don't turn your back on me, baby. You're messing around with your tricks. Don't turn your back on me, baby.
yes, you might just break up my magic spell. You got your spell on me, baby. You got your spell on me, baby. Yes, you got your spell on me, baby. Turning my heart into stone. I need you so bad, magic woman, I can't leave you alone. Yes, I need you so bad.
Mentioned Fleetwood Mac as someone else that has made an impact on your life. What is it about the Mac?
Well, it's Peter Green, really. I like the later stuff because, you know, it was shoved down my throat. And I admire it's like also it's a pop mastery. But before that, with Peter Green, he seems like just a sort of magical individual. The way he plays guitar and his spirit, I feel like I would, if I was going to be a guitar hero, it would be like him. You know, that's someone I would want to write songs like him. It doesn't seem to be ego-driven at all. It just seems to come from somewhere, like the music comes from you don't know where with him. So that's what I look for in my geniuses.
Wake up early and rocket to Alaska to put our masks on to welcome the dawn. Call the huskies and collide into their fur, fragrant in the overcast. Don't be a bitter man, it could be worse. Slave bellow resort, not to Japan. It's cold as shit, always that way.
Bye.
making that first Chicks record?
How was it? It was...
Did it feel like a relief? Did it feel freeing up?
I guess... I don't know. I knew I was going to go on, keep making songs, and... I can't really remember how it felt, except that I was confident or whatever, like, deluded enough to think that it's like... I'm just going to carry on with doing my thing. Doesn't matter who's... It does matter who I pick, but it doesn't have to be, like, the Pavement things, and this is what's going on now. So I just was like, oh, yeah, I'll just try to be like Lou Reed or something when the Velvets quit, you know? I just go on and do my thing. I'm the singer. I can go do my thing, so...
That record's got Jenny and the S-Dog on it, which is a fantastic song. I've always wanted to know if it's based on real characters, because it's such a wonderful, it's such a fantastic story.
Well, yeah, it's nice that you want to know that. It's there are these people. When I lived in Virginia, which is in the mid-Atlantic southern region, and there was this couple that my ex-girlfriend, her best friend, dated this guy in a band. They were Indecision, and they played at the colleges, and they were a Grateful Dead kind of influence cover band, but, you know, like a nice version of the Grateful Dead for fraternity boys and girls. And so, yeah, it's based on their relationship from my perspective, and, of course, like, distorted.
Jennifer dates a man in a 60s cover band. He's the S-Dog, Sean, if you wish. She's 18, he's 31. She's a rich girl, he's the son of a Coca-Cola middleman. Kiss when they listen, two brothers in arms. And if there's something wrong with this, they don't see the harm in joining their forces and singing along. See those rings on her toes? Check that frisbee.
Song, say for instance something like that, which is a pretty clear narrative, quite a conventional kind of structure. Then you've got Can is someone that you've talked about, which is kind of exactly the very opposite of that kind of song. Can you remember first hearing Can and thinking this is, because it's, you know, always a band that makes an impact on people when you hear it for the first time?
I don't know why. I mean, they're, as far as the krautrock goes and groove music, I mean, I think they, this kind of progressive funky groove 70s music.
In the afternoon, Heidi is spoon, she will be soon. With your folk, reads at night, speaks your joke, she stops your life.
mean, they're kind of like the Beatles of that style, as far as I'm concerned. They're, every member is integral, and nobody's like, everyone's kind of equal in it, you know, unlike Peter Green or something. I feel like he's my version of a guitar god or something. He's not like as, they just have this thing, it all fits together. And then I remember when I first heard them, it was in college, of course. It was maybe that same, that Big Brother thing where someone's like, you like this, I'll hear this if you really like that. And it was like, yeah, 1986 or something. And I first heard this thing, and I'm just like, this is bloody weird stuff. And like, it's more than I can understand, sort of a little bit. Or it's bigger than me. They're called Can, and it just, and I started playing it, and I loved it right away.
I want to ask you about the Crust Brothers, which is like a one-off album, Marquee Mark, 1998. A lot of Dylan on that.
Yeah.
When did you fall in love with Dylan?
Well, I never really have. Those guys...
You were just cajoled into doing it.
Well, they did. They were big fans of him. I mean, I learned more about him that time, and then I was in the movie, like you might have asked about, the movie with Todd Haynes, that's, I think, is a really amazing achievement.
This is I'm Not There.
Yeah, by Todd. And, you know, I can get more and more, and my wife likes him a lot.
Is it a war of attrition? You're slowly, slowly falling in love, despite yourself, with Bob Dylan.
Well, I just never...
Okay, all right, I get it.
I never paid that much attention. That being said, I come around to it, of course, to appreciate the waterfall of words and creativity.
Well, that big, dumb blonde with a wheel-gorged turtle, that friend of hers, with his checks all forged and his cheeks in a chunk, with his cheese in the cash. They're all going to be there at that million-dollar bash.
The first name on your list of Key Records is D.L. Hooker, who I've never heard of.
Yeah, he's a... this has been, like, maybe an obsession of mine from my 30s and 40s, is music that is off the grid of the industry, and it's like private press. He printed his own record. He was like a kind of strange guy from Connecticut, and living in his bedroom maybe with his, you know, and he saved up like $1,000 and hired these people and said, like, we're going to make this album. And he printed it himself and made his own covers. Then it sunk. He printed like 1,000 of them and no one paid attention. But then it's rediscovered later by tastemakers and people that we've heard everything. And so you're looking for something new if you're a rock music fan, and something undiscovered and something with like heart. It's just like all about the love of music and talent. But it's not about the producer, it's not about perfection or record sales. I guess that became, you know, something that I would be more into.
What you're doing. I won't know you pretty soon. See it clear, you've poured your own chains. Forge your own chains.
So this new record, Minor Traffic, sees you teaming up with Beck. I am going to ask you, I'm sure you've been asked a lot before.
No problem.
First time you met him?
The very first time was in Philadelphia at this venue called the Trocadero, and he was touring on Loser.
Oh, so as far back as that.
His first tour. So he was playing really small venues. And, you know, people didn't really know. They're like, who is this enigmatic little guy that made this out of nowhere radio hit? And he just came backstage and, like, said, hey, I like Pavement and I'm Beck, and you know, don't hate me for like being the loser guy or something, you know. I think he had a, you know, he was worried people think that he's a
that he was gonna be a one hit wonder or something.
Yeah, or like he's a
novelty hit,
goofball, jerk off corporate idea. No, he wasn't like that. And I was like, dude, I like Loser. And even to this day, I think he feels a little persecuted by that song or something. Like he has some issues he probably needs to work out. It's not for me to talk about, maybe, but you know, he'd be like, you know, Loser came out and I was hated like in Los Angeles, and I was like, dude, people love, we like Loser's a cool song.
It's a great song.
You know, it's really fun. It makes me happy and it's got freedom, and it's, don't feel bad about that. It's a good song. You're all right. You need a hug?
Just moving forward, I think you said recently you've got like a whole album's worth of songs. In fact, I think you said you've got like a million songs ready. Are we going to get album and album and album and album? Is there no end to your mental release schedule in the future?
No, I wouldn't suffer people for that. I mean, I think just it's better now in this time of way too many albums and stuff, and just to let things come out every few years, like, and maybe people, I prefer if people want to like actually listen to it like carefully, rather than like I need to get everything out, because like I don't really need to get everything out. It's not like I need you to hear one to hear everything that we're doing. So a little conceptual move from each one instead of sonic diarrhea.
We've had all these firsts, now it comes to the last, which is the last track, which is a track that you can pick as well, kind of something that means a lot to you.
Joanna Newsom. I love this girl, like I think she's really cool, and her new album, I think she's just expanding on, she's kind of becoming a little bit of a, taking her voice into a more adult place that I relate to and my kids relate to. This song, we play it all the time in my car, and I've heard it like about 40 times in the last 40 days.
We should finish on that then.
Yeah, it's got some good soul, so.
It's good to speak to you, man. Thank you very much.
Driven through by her own sword. Summer died last night. Alone. Thank you.
This is a shorter version of a weekly new music playlist titled Handpicked by Six Music, one of a big collection of music playlists you can now download and subscribe to in the BBC Sounds app. To find the full version, just search Handpicked and check out some of the other playlists tailored for whatever music you need or mood you're in.